Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Any Given Dane Day with Mike Carlson. And it's a huge weekend for those of us who are living in Ireland, of course, with the Dublin game taking place in Croke Park. But there is even bigger news than that, because last week on the pod, I believe it was last week, Mike, obviously you revealed some details about your illness, but I can reveal that you are home and back in Carson Stakely Manor.
I am indeed, and on furlough, as it were, for a blessed weekend, and then I get to go back in for a visit next week and have a biopsy done, and we'll see how that goes. And you know, maybe I'll get to stay home. It's so much easier doing it here.
Yes,
the microphone is much better, but it's also just a whole lot more comfortable. And I get to dress my usual glassy duds.
Now,
which I should say, John Balfe has me all beaten out with a brand new, never touched the ground or the earth, Miles Garrett Browns jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Or a lady's bedroom yet.
Yeah. It's getting its first viewing at ironically enough, at a Pittsburgh Steelers game. So we'll see. I may not be healthy enough to come on the podcast next week. We'll see how that goes.
Well, congratulations, because, you know, you left the Browns alone for a change, and they rewarded you with a win over Green Bay, which is one of the biggest upsets of the season. There were a couple
absolutely
of them last week,
you'll recall
we
that
we're
we did
starting
talk about,
to go back. Yeah,
yeah, we did talk about that a little bit, and I did pick the under. And actually, Kieran O'Connor, I have a bit of a bone to pick with you.
Bone me, John.
Okay, I believe you owe me an apology.
Is this because you were able to prove that they had the best run defense?
Yes, exactly.
Based on
it
what?
More,
based
it was more
stats.
That I raised that point, admittedly, look, quite prematurely after 2 weeks of football. But my point was very much proved true again, once again, in the win over Green Bay, where they held Jacobs to, what, 29 yards? So, yeah, you scoffed when I said best run defense in the league. I believe scoff was the appropriate word to use. And well, at least you've seen the light now, Kieran, I assume.
I know we're not supposed to be talking about last week, but last week's games or whatever. But I'll give you the reason for that Cleveland win in two words: Mason
John
Graham.
Do you think so?
Yep, I know so. I mean,
tell me why.
Him in the,
well, I mean, I, putting, I thought he's great too, but he's, yeah, tell me why.
Yeah, no, putting him in the middle is giving Garrett a whole lot more room to maneuver. And as you said, best run defense as well. They haven't had the best run defense in some of these years where they've had good defense and, you know, and Garrett going crazy. And he just makes such a difference in the middle for them.
Yeah, exactly. And the final thing, just on the Mason Graham thing, I don't want to talk about the Browns too much because I do it all the time. And I'm, as Mike says, I'm literally wearing a Browns jersey and baseball cap as we record this podcast. But I saw a stat going around on social media. Both of you guys might have seen it too. But just regarding Mason Graham, who, just for clarity, was the fifth pick in the NFL draft this year out of Michigan. But he his pass rush win rate against what is considered to be a pretty good Green Bay team this past weekend was 43%. And the average pass rush win rate for an NFL defensive tackle is 9%. So from 9% to 43% for a rookie playing his third ever professional game, it's very, very impressive. He looks like a serious blue chip prospect.
He jumps off the screen at you sometimes, which is unusual for defensive tackles.
Yeah. So now that Kieran has adequately apologized for his terrible, terrible take about the Cleveland Browns defense, I suppose we can move on with the show. Kieran.
I was letting you talk. I was letting you go. Sorry. A couple of things. Sunday featured seven NFL games in which the game-winning score came within the final 3 minutes of the fourth quarter, the most such games in a single day since the 1970 merger. So very, very exciting, and we hope for more. We got a couple of emails during the week, and I want to touch on one very briefly that came in to me from someone who said that they were an avid listener of NFL Only Better and delighted that we'd started this new pad. Jason from, he's living in Belfast. But he wanted us to talk more about the Seattle Seahawks. Now, the unfortunate thing is obviously we're recording late here on Thursday because we had a few little issues yesterday that we wanted to get Mike home. They are the game that's technically on tonight. But Mike, in a line about tonight and maybe even for Jason, just a little bit about where you think the Seahawks are in general. At the moment, they're 4-5 to win tonight. The Cardinals are 21-20. But give us some Seahawks love.
It's funny. Yeah, it's funny because that line opened at the Seahawks were getting 1.5 back on Monday in that game. And then I think saner heads prevailed. James Conner's also out for the Cardinals. I think Seattle, had a reasonably good game. Sam Darnold showed that given protection, he can get the job done for them. It's interesting. The addition of Cooper Kupp has moved Smith and Jigba primarily outside, and he's been much more effective. He looked really good against New Orleans, and New Orleans is a terrible team, but they still have a pretty good defensive core there. And so I don't want to read too much into beating a terrible team, at home, but I think that there's still potential there. They've got the passing game. They've got the running game. Walker is one of the better unknown backs in the NFL. I think he's one of the hardest runners. He breaks a lot of tackles. He's good at yards after contact.
He was fantastic last weekend, I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And McDonald's defense will come around. I think it is coming around, to be honest. So this game, I think, is eminently winnable for Seattle. If you're watching it and now listening to the pod at the same time, I could be wrong.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, look, as I said, that is one that, as we were recording late, so most people are listening to this and the game has taken place. So we've just proved ourselves how right we are. Sunday, we'll see an absolutely massive game for us on that. Sorry, I don't know if you heard that feedback there. Oof. Minnesota Vikings and Pittsburgh Steelers is the game in Dublin. After all these years, the NFL is playing a regular season game in Dublin, in Crow Park. The Minnesota Vikings are 4-6. The Pittsburgh Steelers are 6-5. 2.5 is the spread. 40.5 is the over-under. I can tell you that both of these teams are on the 2-1 list when it comes to the over. And they have been scoring points, although the Steelers didn't really blow anyone away last week when getting the job done. In the NFL, International Series favorites are 36 and 13 against the spread. So 64% of the favorites have won and covered the spread. But as we say about all of these games, and the one in Dublin shall be no different, John Balfe, it is kind of hard to know exactly how the teams will acclimatize to being over here and everything that's happening, because you and I are both around. You're living in Dublin. I'm just outside Dublin. I was up yesterday, went to see Simply Red with the wife. That's right. There's a lot going on in Dublin for it's
a roller coaster here.
Teams and fans get stuff away.
Yeah. I didn't realize your wife sang with Simply Red.
Yeah. And look, sometimes in a marriage, you have to do things, that you'd rather not. And I was the one that was, although I did
make sacrifices.
I slightly enjoyed it. Yeah. I have dragged you to see the Foo Fighters at least twice. So anyway, enough about me. John, game.
Yeah. You opened, Kieran, there with a good point, because you're talking about, the idea of two teams flying across the water to come over here. I looked into it today. So just for the point of the viewer, we're recording this on Thursday at about 7:45 in the evening time. As far as I know, neither of the teams are in Ireland yet, and they won't be for several more hours. I think that they're both leaving roughly around the same time in the States, and that's evening time, US time, obviously. So that would probably be in a few hours from now. So certainly by tomorrow morning, they'll be here. But it means, that is a very, very unnatural thing. And certainly the fact that they're also playing at 2:30 p.m. Irish time, which on the east coast of the US would be 9:30 in the morning, and then obviously change that depending on what part of the country you are in. But so as we have said on this show numerous times over the years, these games become much more of a pick'em, and they become much more about who manages the variables better. And it really is a kind of a coin toss in this regard. It's kind of also reflected a little bit in the odds from what I see. We have, I think most bookmakers have the Vikings as the marginal favorites, like semi-strong. I think it's a 2.5 point spread. The over-under, I think, is 40.5, or at least it was earlier on Thursday. So it seems like Vegas are saying that the Vikings are going to take this one and they might travel better. But look, we have Carson Wentz in there. We've got a backup quarterback And we know just this is a very volatile betting game as far as I'm concerned. I do think the Vikings are a stronger team. The Steelers, I have question marks over Aaron Rodgers, but if you have a question mark over the Steelers quarterback, you also by default have to have a question mark about the opposition with their backup quarterback as well. So look, I think this is a very, very difficult game to pick. I say that we also say the same thing every single year, is just be very, very careful if you're actually wagering on these types of games, because they are so unusual compared to, you know, the standard NFL slate on a Sunday. So, you know, I'd be favoring the Vikings to win on this one. The over-under tends to be where I concentrate my efforts on these types of games. The over-under, as I mentioned a moment ago, is 40.5 at the moment. Look, I think this will probably hit the under. I hope I'm wrong, because I'll be in attendance that day. I would just like to see an entertaining game of football. But, you know, sometimes low-scoring games can be entertaining too, and I hope that's the case, because I think it will be low-scoring.
Yeah, it's a tough one, because it really boils down in my mind to the strength of Pittsburgh's defense, especially up front, putting pressure on Darnold, making him revert to bad Sam, which people seem to kind of expect that he eventually will do. But on the other hand, Aaron Rodgers has been historically unimpressive so far as the quarterback for Pittsburgh, and it's kind of showing the way to control him. I find the points interesting for the Steelers, but the last time these two teams met overseas, Minnesota won 24-17 in London.
When was that, do you remember?
Admittedly, 2013.
Okay.
So we can't read much in it. And Minnesota's also 4-0 in the international series. They've never lost, but I don't think they've done that under Kevin O'Connell. And like John said, the big thing here is how quickly you acclimate to the game. And the idea of flying on Thursday, you have a light practice Friday, which is kind of what you would be doing if you were in the States. You've had your practice on Thursday, normal. And then you have walkthrough and relax. So the only big thing is time difference. And the 2 days gives you a bit of time to acclimate to that. And so, you know, I'm really torn with it. I hesitate to pick Minnesota, although I kind of favor them, as I said said before. But in the end, Pittsburgh's defense, you know, could really be the biggest thing in this game. And I edge toward the over in this, just on the assumption that if Pittsburgh play a really good defensive game that win, they're going to get points on turnovers. I think they need to in order to win almost.
I heard that both teams have changed their practice schedules so that they've been training early in the morning to acclimatize to that kind of time frame. So.
But yeah, we'll see how that goes. Sorry to cut across you, but like, there's only really so much you can do, like, to simulate playing a game at 9:30 in the morning. I know these guys, a lot of these guys, almost all of them, will go into the practice facility when they're in a standard game week. They go in very, very early in the morning. So it's not like it's unusual for them to be awake or something like that at 9:30 in the morning, or, you know, being athletically ready or capable of performing. But still, like, you know, add on a long flight, add in a time difference, add in an unusual field. Like, they even, you know, there was the college game in the Aviva Lands End Road last month, or was that the month before, a month ago or so, I know a lot of both teams were complaining about the field, the turf. So there's all sorts of things that can, you know, place themselves and become central to how the game script plays out. But again,
they always do, because the grass in these stadiums is designed for soccer, football, and it's thin and a bit slippery for their tastes. So yeah, but that's kind of a common thing.
It's going to be a big problem again. After that game, the big one at 6 o'clock, we'll be heading to the pub, will be the Philadelphia Eagles at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Eagles are 8-15. The Bucs are 6-4. 3.5 is the spread. 44.5 is the over-under. Mike, I'll come to you. Who was luckier at the weekend to win their game?
Well, luck is the residue of design. When I watch that block kick, it looks to me like Jalen Carter is basically propelling Davis in front of him to get the block. You know, not quite lifting him, but propelling him forward. And then Shelby Harris, of course, picks it up and runs. Like, I don't know what it was. It was like a 4-2, 140. I intercepted a pass in high school. I was playing like defensive end, and I had a lot of linebacker responsibility, and they threw into the flat at the Southern Connecticut State University freshman team. And I tipped it to myself, basically, and then ran. I think it was 57 yards or something.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't, I was on the kickoff team. I couldn't go down on the next kickoff. I had never run so hard in my life. Ain't nobody was going to catch me on this one. And so I know the feeling. I thought, I just thought that was one of those things with this week. Like I said at the beginning, we started to have some really really crazy results, some upsets as well, with Tampa, Tyrod Taylor almost pulled off a big one. I think that's probably the best way to say it. And Baker has been walking a fine line for the past few weeks. He's thrown a lot of it, and I'm not watching the whole games with Tampa, but he's throwing a lot of interceptable balls. You know, he's playing like Baker in college, which is not a bad thing by any means, especially because they're enduring. But what worries me on this one is Mike Evans is probably out. And he's, I mean, as much as I love
Ibuka.
And I think he's going to be really good. And he actually is already really good.
Yeah.
I think they still depend on Mike Evans, you know, because when you put the two factors together, Baker running around like crazy, like a madman, and he's very good at keeping his eyes downfield as he scrambles, one of the best. But Evans is the obvious, like, kind of big target in those kind of things. They've got some other injury concerns. Philadelphia is 6-1 against the spread on the road last seven games. And my only worry here, it was 3 at the get off, and I liked the Eagles giving 3. 3.5 makes me hesitate just to drop, because it's apparently going to be a 90 degree Tampa day, which means very humid. And all those fat guys in the front, apart from Shelby Harris, now Davis has lost a lot of weight, you know, too, are going to tire. I don't know if Philly's got the rotation up front that they had before, but I still like the Eagles on the road. I'm starting to, after 3 very conservative weeks of picking, I'm starting to kind of loosen up a little bit.
Come around. I'll answer Kieran's initial question about luck. Just as it relates to the books once again. And it's basically just touching on Mayfield, Baker Mayfield, and the start that he has had so far this season. And you can, like, I certainly take Mike's points about, like Baker hasn't thrown, to the best of my knowledge, I'm nearly certain I'm correct about this, but he hasn't thrown a pick yet so far this season. But the other thing that he has done, well, actually, just as a side note, after 3 weeks of the NFL season, he is the highest rushing yards of any quarterback in the league, which I don't think anybody saw coming through 3 games.
But I don't think anybody but you has seen it all, you know, now.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
It's like a hidden stat.
Yeah. But the thing that has impressed me the most, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this will be well aware of this, or might have read about it on social media or whatnot, but the idea that this is 3 games in a row now that Baker Mayfield has led a game-winning drive, you know, to just basically grab the entire game by the scruff of the neck and just, you know, through the sheer force of will, bring the Bucs to a victory. So, you know, you can look at that 2 different ways. On the one hand, the optimistic glass half full side of it says that this is a quarterback kind of moving to the next level of his career. He's a guy, he's capable of reading a game, making the right move at the right time, which is a very, very important thing. But the other side, the glass half empty side of this, the more pessimistic view would be this: look, that luck is going to run out at some time soon. You can't always just do this over and over and over again. You can't be a team that is going to be trailing in the fourth quarter and just give it to Baker and say, like, right, off you go, you know, do your thing. So that luck is going to run out soon. And by the, you know, the odds, or just by, you know, when you're playing a team who are the Super Bowl champions and who are 3-0 when it comes to your home stadium, that kind of on paper is where that kind of luck might run out, particularly a team like Philly, who can score in a variety of different ways, mostly on the ground, to be honest, because Jalen Hurts has been, you know, I think hasn't been fantastic. Oh, he was good last week, I suppose. But at the same time, you know, it's not been this well-oiled Philadelphia Eagles unit that stormed the Super Bowl last year. If anything, their early play, again, despite being 3-0, but their early play suggests maybe a moderate level of regression from where they were last year. We'll see as the season unfolds, obviously, because it's still only three games in. But yeah, I think I'll go the Buccaneers here on this one. Are there, I can't remember if you did the odds, Kieran. I think we have the Bucs at +3.5 and the over-under is being 44.5. I'll be taking the Bucs.
Those are both correct.
Three. Yeah, I'll be taking the Bucs +3.5 on this one because home field advantage, I take on what Mike has said also about the weather and the humidity just being an impact on this game as well. But crucially, and I think this is the point we also made on last week's show, is that we're having the tush push now, but we also have Vita Vea on the other side of it. So if he can...
That's a great point.
Yeah, if this is a thing that can really restrict Philly's momentum and also just their sort of go-to things that they do, if there's a span of thrown in the works of the things that have been working for them so well so far this season, that might be have a huge impact in the game. So just throw the big body of Vita Vea in the way and see what happens, and they give the ball to Mayfield in the fourth quarter, and hey, they might win, and I think they will.
Last week, they actually started involving A.J. Brown on something more than the five-yard slant, which was a positive move for them.
Yeah, of course, they had been very much on the ground when we spoke about it, that he hadn't thrown in for 10 yards. But they kind of had to, the Eagles, they had to let him cook, you know? They just had to.
Yeah.
We shouldn't say cook, should we, though? Poor old Russell getting the bench of the Giants. It's one for another day. It's one for another day. Right. The 9:25 game, the Baltimore Ravens take on the Kansas City Chiefs. It's 4-6 about the Ravens. The Kansas City Chiefs are 6-5. 2.5 is the spread. 48.5 is the over-under. Mike, if I told you a couple of weeks ago that whoever lost this game would be 1-3, you would have said, Kieran, you're a fucking idiot. That won't happen. But it's going to happen.
Probably so. Although you could kind of see... No, I probably would have agreed with you. Yeah. But, you know, Ravens in particular had a pretty, you know, tight, tough first four games of the season. So you don't know where they lie there. But it is one of those games where you just say to yourself, well, you know, Baltimore's going to pull it out because they have to. And then the guy on the other side is saying the Chiefs are going to pull it out because they have to. And it's probably that big for both teams. I see that Kansas City's 4-1 against Baltimore in the last five games that they've played, but they're 1-5 against the spread at home in the last six games they've played. So they're 3-point favorites, which is understandable at home, I think. To me, the question is, what about Derrick Henry? Can he have another big game, and can he avoid key turnover? And I point out, in those two losses, his key turnovers were one first game caused by Ed Oliver, literally. I mean, Ed Oliver standing him up behind the line of scrimmage and then pulling the ball away. And then last week it was Aiden Hutchinson who did pretty much the same thing, got into the backfield, stopped him, and pulled the ball away. And, you know, the game is just crying for Chris Jones to stand him up in the backfield and pull the ball away and change the dimensions of the game. I kind of like Baltimore here, although I don't like the idea of them giving points to Kansas City. They're going to have to build up a lead. But when you watch Kansas City's offense, you know, what you were saying about Baker applies to Mahomes almost equally as much, apart from the fourth quarter comebacks. You know, their offense has been Mahomes scrambling, basically, you know, and hitting Tyquan Thornton. And I don't want to go into a game thinking, yeah, we got Tyquan Thornton, we're okay, you know, because you ain't.
Yeah. Bro, sure, Tyquan's down there somewhere. Just lob it down.
Lob it up.
Yeah. No defensive coordinator has ever tilted his game plan to account for Tyquan Thornton. And I think we're still a few weeks away from anyone doing that. So I'm looking at it and really looking under at 48.5. Is it still 48.5?
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. You're back to being an undertaker. Fair play. To
me, yeah. To me, I think that's it's a slightly better bet than taking either of the two.
I don't, John, I'm going to fire it
I'd
over to
still
you.
Lead. I'd still lean toward Baltimore, even giving the points.
See, we had a chat.
I'm not
John.
Sure Baltimore are good.
No, they are. I'm not sure Kansas are any good at all.
Well, I agree with that.
Baltimore's a great. I think Baltimore's a great bet. John, you take it. You take it. 4-6 Baltimore, Chiefs 6-5, 2.5 spread. It's got to be Ravens.
Thanks for that, Kieran.
It's my Raven.
I think, look, I said it last week or the week before. It's blanking on me at the moment, but never bet against Patrick Mahomes when he's a home underdog. Well, you should not have taken my advice that time around, but generally speaking, that kind of proves true much more often than it doesn't. So I have a great deal of internal dilemma with picking Patrick Mahomes to be an underdog again within the span of like 2 weeks to not win the game, though. I mean by that, of course. So I just think this is a very, like, it's clearly a very big game for both teams. Kieran, if you're a bit higher on the Ravens, they may have a little bit more wiggle room, a little bit more rope to improve as the season goes on or to get back on the track, particularly within the AFC North. If they do 1-3, like, you could see them potentially getting their act together. And like Lamar Jackson is clearly outstanding and has been outstanding even when the Ravens don't necessarily play that well. So that's a huge factor. But look, I'm still clinging on to this idea of Mahomes just being a true difference maker in this regard. But as Mike was clearly kind of stating there as well, you have to have someone to throw to. And even the sort of the Travis Kelce safety blanket isn't really the same, doesn't have the same impact that it used to either, because Kelce has dropped off a cliff the last year or two too. So
the man's like, planning a wedding, John, and I can tell you that's not easy.
Yeah, we should give him a little bit of time to get his act together as well, much like the rest of the team. But look, you know, the Kansas City defense has not looking been good. They're ranked 22nd in opponent EPA per play so far this year. They're 24th in opponent success rate. There's massive, massive signs of regression across the field here. But just there's just this thing that sits deep inside me that is cautious about, you know, advocating for Patrick Mahomes to lose at home as an underdog for two games in a row, or two times in a row when he's been the underdog. So look, personally speaking, I'll be staying away from this game, but if I was to be throwing some money down, I'd be going the Chiefs plus 2.5. It's just too attractive, and it is a rare thing to have Chiefs as a home underdog, so sometimes when it's there, you have to grasp it and just kind of hope for the best.
I don't know about you, dear listener, but I get hard as a rock when John starts pulling out stats like that. So there we go. The late game.
Dear listener, I shall abstain from pulling out stats in future.
we have a little meeting beforehand as a team to kind of discuss which games we're going to pick on. And obviously, usually we do look at Sunday Night Football. But Mike Carlson said straight off the bat, he said to me, Kieran, I want to talk about the Dallas Cowboys game. And I went, okay. So we're going to do that. The Green Bay Packers at the Dallas Cowboys. It's 3-10 about the Packers who were crushed by the Browns last week. The Dallas Cowboys are 12-5, 6.5 spread, 47.5 is the over-under. Mike, why did you want to talk about this game so much?
I just very simply, for Dallas, CeeDee Lamb is out. Now, sometimes when you lose your top receiver like that and he's not really dominating the way a top receiver would, and there's reasons, I'm not blaming CeeDee Lamb, there's good reasons for that. It makes the other guys play better. You know, you spread things out. The offense gets better at least for a week. But in this case, I don't think that happens. And I think Green Bay just rebound from that terrible loss, because Dallas doesn't have a defense like Cleveland. Face it. Mike, they miss Micah. You know, and Green Bay like Micah. You know, he hasn't done anything spectacular statistically, but when you watch the way they're using him, it lets them do all sorts of other things that offenses have to be bothered by. And I think they actually kill the Dallas secondary, which kind of flatters to deceive. There's big names there, but I don't think they're playing that way. So 5.5 is a tough spread, but I mean, I like the Packers to win the game, and I'm actually at the point where I think they can cover the spread.
Is the spread still, is it, do you, what spread do you have, Kieran?
I have 6.5 right now, though.
I have 6.5,
okay.
Too.
So, yeah, so it's gone up. I mean, what that says to me is that since I looked at, you know, at the stuff on Monday and all, people agree that, you know, Green Bay is the superior team. Stays under a touchdown, I'll still take it.
Okay, yeah. I think the Dallas game was on Red Zone. There was a really quite interesting part of it where I believe Tony Romo was covering the game as he does for a lot of Dallas games. And he actually said near the start of the game, he goes, Dallas are in a lot of trouble over the top. Long balls over the top seem to be catching them out. And once again, John, it was prophetic from him because Dallas keep getting caught out by long throws over the
top. Yeah, look what it's to illustrate that point, Kieran. Look at what Russell Wilson did. What was it, 350 yards?
Yeah.
Was it in the four? Was it three? It wasn't in the fours, was it? Anyway, Russell Wilson got a lot of yards in the
air.
It was
380, I think.
Yeah. And what did Caleb Williams get as well? He like all of a sudden.
Did you see the last drive? I've never seen anything so pathetic.
You'll have to remind me. What happened?
You're inside the 10. He threw balls away.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. On fourth down.
This is Russell. Yeah. Yes. I think that's what got him sacked, actually.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
It was like four bad decisions or bad throws, you know, consecutively.
Yeah. Well, that's the New York. The Jackson Dart era has now begun in on one side of New York, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, which will be interesting, but again, that's a game I'm really looking at closely.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess I'll throw in my final thought on this particular game. I won't labor this too much because I basically agree with everything that Mike said. The idea is that we talked a minute ago about the Bucks losing Mike Evans and the potential for, you know, Ibuka to fill the void there. I'd be more confident of Ibuka stepping in for Evans than I would be of George Pickens stepping in for CeeDee Lamb in this game.
Absolutely. Yeah,
because if this doesn't go well, you're become, from a Cowboys perspective, Kieran, I'm sorry to say this about your beloved Dallas Cowboys, but they'll have to be very, very extremely over-reliant on their offensive firepower if they do have that inevitable defensive collapse, or if they do just give up yard after yard after yard after yard. So look, yeah, I can't. Packers minus -6.5 is the way to go here. I think they'll probably win by more than a touchdown.
Okay. Just touching on that New York crisis at the moment for both football teams, the Giants and Jets have played a combined 39 night games since the start of the 2019 season. They are now 5-34 in those games, including 4-18 at home.
That's their bedtime. What do you expect?
It's not great, lads. It is not great. The big finish. We got two more games that we want to look at very quickly.
The big show.
We have... sorry, it's not. It's one. No, because we said we were going to leave Jets Dolphins because it's terrible. Bengals Broncos. We cut the other one for time. 11-4 about the Cincinnati Bengals.
Excuse me a second. I'm interrupting you at the wrong time. But someone did put up a meme about like the 10 worst passes of the week. And the two honorable mentions were Tua. No, it was a five. And the next five were all Tua.
Yeah, he's having a tough time of it at the moment. The Bengals are also having a tough time of it at the moment and look to be floundering quite substantially, let's be honest. They're 11-4 to win at the weekend. The Broncos are 1-4, and the Bengals 7.5 to spread, 9-10, pick 'em 43.5 is the over under. Yeah, John, you said it's great. Take it from there. Broncos are doing pretty well. The Broncos are doing well. Not winning games. They're playing well. Let me finish. The Broncos are playing well and not winning games and getting heartbreaking losses.
Are they playing well?
Yeah, I think they are. Yeah. I think they should have beaten the Colts in a very high scoring game. And there's arguments that they should have beaten the Chargers the other day, even though I backed the Chargers in play, so I was happy with that.
Yeah,
anyway,
okay.
Forget about
I'll
me.
Take it.
Forget about me. I'll go to you. Take it.
I don't think the Bengals are on a very good track at the moment, and that's principally because it's just pure bad luck because they lost their quarterback Joe Burrow, who's one of the best in the league, and look, Jake Browning did not play well week three against the Vikings. That did not go very, very well for them, and you're starting to see now that we've got 3 weeks in the books, you can kind of be a little bit more You can look at the stats and the trends a little bit with a little bit more authority now, because it seems 3 weeks is a decent sample size for this type of stuff. So the Bengals net yards per play, they're 31st of 32 NFL teams. That's not good. They're last in EPA per play, which shows basically the offense has collapsed post Joe Burrow. And look, I don't know about Zach Taylor, man. I don't know if there's going to be coaching changes midseason. And look, Bengals have a winning record, but I don't think Zach Taylor's the guy. And I don't think he's been the guy for a while there. So we'll see. That's TBC. We'll see how that develops as the season goes on. Yeah, Broncos, They have a 1-2 record, Kieran, as you know. To be fair, they're playing better than the team that has a losing record. So I'll give you that one. Their defense is considered one of the best in the NFL. The secondary is particularly effective. And they have a pretty decent balanced roster kind of all across the board. And look, they're the home team in this as well. And that's going to be a very, very tough environment for Jake Browning, a backup QB, to play in. So I think the Broncos, with a bit more sort of stability across the roster in terms of availability, and just how the Bengals just seem to be in the initial throes of what looks like a prolonged collapse from my perspective, I'm Broncos all day here. So the odds for this particular one, the spread is 7.5 in favor of the Broncos. Well, the Broncos are -7.5, which is the 0.5 there is a little bit strange to me, I suppose. And then the over-under is 43.5. I'm taking Broncos -7.5 in this one. I'd like it if it was a little bit lower, to be perfectly honest with you, but I think the Broncos win this all day long. If you're happier, if you're putting this into an accumulator, I think Broncos just to win standalone on top of a couple of other wagers might be a nice way to go. But yeah, Broncos, and seeing if you're brave enough to do the 7.5, but Broncos to win for sure.
Yeah, I think if it's close at the end, the weather factor, the altitude factor applies. Teams do tend to fade toward the end of games in Denver. In a sense, Joe Burrow and the Bengals have flattered to deceive when Burrow's healthy. They really depend on the threat of him and the two receivers, Hendrickson, and some pass rushing, but they're not very good right now anywhere else on the defense. There hasn't been that much change since Lou Anarumo left, and Anarumo wasn't that good for the last couple of years because he was kind of doing smoke and mirrors with his pass rushers. So I agree with pretty much everything John has said there. The half point is a bother to me. But I looked at this game and the first thing I thought was under, and it opened at 47.5 and dropped down pretty quickly to 43.5. And I think I'd still take the under now at 43.5.
Okay. That's the last game we're going to look at. Mike, I'm going to send it back to you, right? Because you are once again the gatekeeper of the best bets of the week. And I should remind people that I tended to be the one with the best record come the end of the season. And the two guys, in their wisdom, Kieran would no longer be allowed. Be the one that keeps track of everything because they were jealous. So now Mike does it. So Mike, over to you. Who won last week? Oh, did Kieran win again? Oh, I bet he did. Yeah.
No, you weren't the best last year. Not by a long shot.
No. Not last year. In previous years, I had.
Before, by the way, knowing Kieran gone for a long time, this is how he talks about his fantasy football teams over the years. He had success in fantasy football about 12 years ago, and he's still like a multi-time champion.
Because who's going to care? Who's going to remember?
Four finals, three victories. Oh yeah, it wasn't just some. It was pretty amazing. Yeah,
what have you done for me lately, Kieran? What have you done for me lately?
I'm back. At least I'm not going 1-3 like Bodhi. Anyway,
take that, Bodhi. Anyway, Mike, sorry, you've got the floor.
Okay, yeah. So last week, the magnificent Kieran O'Connor managed to take the Chargers -3.5 against the Raiders. To take Pittsburgh.
I took Pittsburgh, yes.
-1.5 against New England.
So that, never in doubt.
That was money in the bank. I remember looking at that one and looking at New England and saying, life's too short. And that was a game that the Patriots actually played pretty well, but did their best to hand it to Pittsburgh and were very successful there. Although I saw an interesting thing. Tomlin told his team that the Patriots would fumble the game away to them. And they were apparently were tackling to get the
fumble.
Fumbles to try to force fumbles and did. I had the Chargers -2.5 against Denver. That one made it by a half a point. So I was a bit lucky there. And John had Tampa -6.5 to the Jets. And they lost by 2. So that was an 8.5 point there. So the standings, if you're interested, after 3 weeks.
No, I'm not that interested.
John has 1-2. Kieran has 2-1, and I've got 3-0.
The 3-0, the undefeated start. Look at this guy. We're all gunning for
there
you,
we go.
Mike. We're coming
not,
up.
And not that I would ever, ever, ever brag on it.
Well,
unlike some people.
I mean, currently are, I believe. Anyway, you can go first then.
Okay, I'll go first. I'm sticking with the Chargers, even though the spread, even though they're on the road and the spread is 5.5. I'm really tempted to go under here. It's 44-5 against the Giants, but I have the feeling Jackson Dart's not going to be tossing darts in this one. So I'll take the Chargers minus 5.5.
Excellent. Excellent. That's a good one. I am going to, I'll tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a little asterisk beside this one, because this one I just hope and pray for, to be honest, because we are attending the game, of course. So I'm going to go over in the Dublin game. Hopefully we'll get a tutty fest, as I like to call them.
So that's
tutty
over
fest,
40,
John.
Over 40.5, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
a different
bad.
Thing, John.
I think that's a good one.
I'm just looking at this. This isn't my best bet, but do you guys know off the top of your head what the spread in the Saints, because I'm looking at it right now, this is the question, but like, do you know what the spread in the Saints-Bills game is?
So I do. I'm going to have to say that I do, because
16,
I
was
going to back
16 and a half.
Oh, it's gone down. It's only 15 and a half now. That's up
yeah,
there
it opened,
with the
well,
largest
it opened
I've
it,
ever seen.
It opened at 13 and a half, and then the bookies had their coffee, and it went up to 16 and a half.
Exactly. Okay, you did the Chargers again, Mike, did you?
I took the Chargers again, yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah,
I'm
13
going...
and a half is interesting there. You know, I said last week, I tend to avoid that on the show, because I try to make the best bet something that's relatively safe. You know, the opportunities
exactly.
for a backdoor cover are immense here, given that Buffalo could go way up, way early, as far as I can see.
Oh, I'm in two minds about this. Okay, look, I'm not going to overthink this. I'm going to go back in the Cleveland Browns Detroit Lions game. The over or the over under is 44.5. I've spoken a lot, and there's been a lot of noise and hubbub in the media about how good this Browns defense is. So I'm just going to say that that's going to go on for one more game. Playing away in Detroit to the Lions is a different proposition now, in fairness. But I just think that this Browns team can properly score very little, but also prevent the Lions from scoring too much. So I'd be going under 44.5 on this.
There we go.
That's an interesting one. Well, we'll see how those get on next week. And look, that is the end of this week's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you are attending the game on Sunday, a reminder, John and I are both attending with some friends. Come on over, say hello to John, take a picture with him. Don't bother me. I'm at the game.
Yeah, if you hear our voices, that's how you'll recognize us, because we're...
That's sure. Right.
How would you describe us, Kieran?
Doing video, yeah.
I would
yeah.
say slicker than your average.
Average what?
Person. That's how I would describe us.
I'm glad I put you on the spot with that one, Kieran. You've nailed it.
Thank you. I would say we look worse than you would possibly expect us to look.
We all have voices for radio. Or faces for radio. Is that the one?
I think it's faces for
anyway,
radio.
Anyway. If you think you see us, even if you're only like 10% sure, just go up and say you enjoy the podcast, right? Even if it's probably not us. So just go around saying that to people, strangers, and you might get us. So who knows?
Mike's been sick since May, and he's still the best looking of the three of us.
Yeah, I'm enjoying my new hairdo. the kind of receding gray. I'm amazed I have any hair left, and so is everybody else.
Yeah, well, you've still got the most hair on the podcast, Mike.
Again, that is true. That is true. That's true. Look, that's it. We leave it on a high. Look, really looking forward to the game on Sunday. Let's have a cracker. Thank you so much for listening. My thanks to John Bath for joining me once again, and thanks to Mike Carlson back in Carlson Stately Manor. Thank God for that. And look, have a wonderful time at the game if you are going, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.